When text messaging was introduced, it changed the world. As over a billion people adopted text, the world assumed text messages would be dominated by the United States or the United Kingdom, where it was born. Instead, it emerged in the most unlikely place, in Southeast Asia, specifically in the Philippines. In 2006, while the average American sends over 500 text messages, the average Filipino sends over a whopping 1,500. So text-obsessed is the country that, as a whole, they send more messages than over 300 million Americans combined. And the Philippines is dubbed the text capital of the world. This also makes the telecommunications industry a very lucrative business, which has turned into a duopoly between the Philippine Long Distance Telephone Company, or PLDT, and Globe Telecom. Individually, PLDT and Globe have more subscribers than the total population of Thailand. And today, they are viewed as equals. But this was not always the case. In the late 2000s, PLDT had over twice the number of users and operating cash flow, with about four times the market value as Globe. This is a story of Globe Telecom's radical change that would reshape the world of connectivity for the Philippines. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 1 of a four-part series, An Astronomical Opponent. To those outside of the Philippines, this might be your first time hearing about these telecommunication companies. But their influence around the region is profound. PLDT is part of a consortium called Asia Direct Cable, or ADC, which includes other players such as China Telecom, Singtel, SoftBank, and Viettel. The ADC is a project which turns Asia into a key information hub around the world through faster, smoother, and more sustainable network connectivity. Beyond just a council for discussion, the ADC pours hundreds of millions into linking East and Southeast Asia connectivity. While PLDT and Globe may seem a little more quiet internationally, to the Filipinos, these companies are known for their long-drawn rivalry, which has attracted international giants, Tencent and Alibaba. Known for backing almost every dominant startup within China, both Tencent and Alibaba turned their attention to the Philippines in the late 2010s. Alibaba invested into Globe to supercharge a fintech wallet named GCash, while Tencent invested into PLDT to create the competitor Maya. Today, GCash and Maya have benefited from Tencent and Alibaba's proxy war, both becoming the Philippines' first unicorns, with the two locked in a fierce head-to-head battle for supremacy. We'll cover their fast-paced battle, which extends from the decades-long telecommunications war between Globe Telecom and PLDT. Back in a different era, PLDT was over twice the size of Globe. But their difference was about to get a whole lot wider, because the Philippines was undergoing great change. Ferdinand Marcos had just come into power as the president of the Philippines. And unbeknownst to everyone, he was about to drive the nation off a cliff. It's the mid-1970s. And Ramon Cojuangco was likely making his way to Malacañang Palace, worried. Back then, the Cojuangco family owned PLDT and many more businesses because their lineage is dynastic. Tracing back to 1861, they quickly rose to become a rice trade powerhouse. With every generation, their lines splintered, some finding incredible success, which includes founding a bank, sugar mills, and politics. Eventually, the Cahuangcos would form blood ties with the Aquinos and become political kingmakers within the country. For Ramon himself, he had become a businessman and bought over the largest telecommunications company, PLDT. Back then, PLDT wasn't much. Originally set up during the Spanish-American War, it was ravaged after World War II. Ironically, the devastation wasn't caused only by the Japanese, but by the Americans who destroyed the PLDT system to prevent the Japanese from utilizing it. Guilt or otherwise, post-World War, American aid quickly came flowing into PLDT, and they could rebuild their system. To Ramon, his purchase of PLDT felt like a victory, because he reined a foreign entity into his family control. But today, he was wondering if that control would now belong to the government. Still visibly unsettled, he opened the doors to meet Ferdinand Marcos, the current president and soon-to-be dictator of the Philippines.
"Come, Ramon. Can I get you a whiskey?"
Ferdinand might have said.
"I'll have whatever you're having. Smart man."
Ferdinand proceeded to pour a stained blue bottle Johnny Walker into two separate glasses before walking over.
"Have a sip. I've a secret to tell you."
Ferdinand Marcos came from a political family that traced back to the early 1900s. But few were as successful as him. He was incredibly charismatic, with reportedly over 33 medals and awards during his time in the military. Through his speeches, he had galvanized the country by acknowledging the power of the people, that by their hands, they could remake destiny. Not just of their own, but of the country's. Provided that they vote for him.
"They cannot succeed without the support of the people. I am happy to see that the reaction throughout the country is favorable. I have received hundreds and hundreds of telegrams from all corners of the Philippines congratulating you and incidentally me."
Entrusting their destiny to Ferdinand, the people elected him as president, who, by most accounts, seemed to lead a successful first term. He was spending heavily on infrastructure projects and vastly improved the English literacy rates in the Philippines. But quickly, things started to seem amiss. The country's debt was rising, and many projects weren't translating to the economy's progress. Today, we know that Ferdinand had taken up long-term debt to fund current projects, of which many were simply aesthetic in nature. While the majority of Filipinos were wondering why their lives seemed in stasis, or worse, only a small group were benefiting. Tracing their roots, they would all have one thing in common. They knew Marcos at one point in their lives, including some of the Cahuangco family, who amassed votes for him in Tarlac City. This brings us back to Malacañang Palace, where Ramon was probably glad that he was on the right side of the family. The whiskey had hit Ramon hard in the nose, but not as hard as Ferdinand's question.
"How's your uncle, Jose?"
Immediately, his heart was racing. This wasn't a question. It was a reminder. During the run-up to Ferdinand's victory, not all of the Cahuangco family had supported him. Jose Cahuangco had bitterly opposed Marcos, and in return, governmental forces seemed to shift in his disfavor. Suddenly, bank capital requirements became more stringent for the Cahuangco-controlled bank, and many other crucial government approvals seemed forever pending. Eventually, their bank was consumed by the United Coconut Planters Bank, which was headed by one of Ferdinand's allies. Knowing full well of the repercussions, Ramon answered quietly,
"I haven't kept in touch with him. By the way, the whiskey is amazing." "Yeah, I know. We indulge among ourselves."
Ferdinand paused.
"Now enough small talk. Let's talk about the future of PLDT. What do you mean? The world is opening up, Ramon. And as more entrants come into the Philippines, we'll be at the mercy of others. So what I mean is that we've got to work together and protect PLDT and ensure the survival of the company.
Ramon was catching on. He had seen this happen to other industries before his. It started on September 23, 1972, when Ferdinand had declared martial law.
For the proclamation of martial law, for the sudden cessation of anarchy and of criminality throughout the land.
Supposedly, it was to maintain national stability, and the Philippine military had ballooned to over 4 times its original size. Over time, this spilled over to the economy, and industries were nationalized. Surprisingly, it's not completely far-fetched, given that a country would want to protect their national resources. But in Ferdinand's case, each nationalized industry was offered to a friend and awarded a government contract that seemed to give outsized investments almost instantly. It was assumed that if Ferdinand favored your industry, and you aren't just set for life. Your children and your grandchildren can live off the money earned off of these contracts. It was also why Ramon was probably feeling a sense of relief and excitement as Marcos pressed his case.
Here's what I'm suggesting. We nationalize our telecommunications industry and we put you in charge. What about our competitors? They aren't much, but over 60 small telephone companies still own 12% of the market,
Ramon asked. Ferdinand downed his last bit of whiskey and smiled.
There can only be one national telecommunications company, Ramon.
That day, PLDT would become a powerful ally to the government. And in return, the industry radically changed in PLDT's favor. With freedom to act against their competitors, PLDT took drastic steps. It started first with a slowing down of network connectivity among smaller telephone companies. Because these firms relied on PLDT's landlines, PLDT could actively slow down any transmissions from them. An association that formed in retaliation fell on deaf ears as PLDT continued to monopolize the market. Then Presidential Decree No. 217 was decreed by Ferdinand Marcos. Because telecommunications is now a national resource, the cost of expanding landlines must be borne by the public. By law, every postpaid fixed line subscriber had to now buy PLDT's 10% cumulative convertible preferred stock as part of upfront payments. This gave a huge forced injection into PLDT from the public, where 30% of the population was still below the poverty line. Under Ferdinand Marcos, PLDT was well protected, and it began to breed a culture of complacency. There was nothing to innovate, as there was no competition. It also became known that PLDT would prioritize the allies of Ferdinand, while the common people suffered poor connection. By 1992, landline setups could take as long as 15 years in Metro Manila, the capital of the Philippines. Even countries beyond the Philippines were aware of PLDT's poor service, which culminated in a statement by then Singapore Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew, who joked,
98% of Filipinos are waiting for a telephone, while the other 2% are waiting for the dial tone.
The Ferdinand Marcos era spanned for over 20 years from 1965 to 1986. During that time, the Philippines experienced a radical change that birthed one of the greatest wealth divisions in history. So rich were Ferdinand's elite allies that they became known as the Rolex 12, which had built a chasm that could never be bridged. Eventually, some would diversify and spread the wealth to a new generation, or friends, which is why the same financial divide continues today. For perspective, the top 9 richest billionaires in the Philippines have more wealth than the bottom half of the Philippine population. Put another way, these 9 billionaires are richer than 55 million Filipinos. PLDT had benefited greatly from the government's favor and became the largest telecommunications company in the Philippines, becoming an opponent that many thought was astronomical. The Philippines will be undergoing a revolution very soon. But we've got a few seconds before it hits. If you enjoy Empires, please do give us a 5-star rating. It really helps the podcast. Done? Right on time, because a revolution is about to begin. It's now 1986, and something incredible took the Philippines by storm, called the People Power Movement.
Sa henerasyon ngayon ang hindi na inabutan ng EDSA, first bloodless revolution in history.
Pebrero 22, taong 1986.
Is that there was a report that we are going to be arrested, all of us.
Ferdinand's regime had turned for the worst, and stories including the pouring of acid down people's throats and the live burial of political dissidents were spreading. In retaliation, a coup occurred that eventually led to Marcos's exile and the rise of Corazon Aquino as the 11th president, and Fidel V. Ramos as the 12th president of the Philippines. During this period, the two presidents sought to dismantle some of the policies in place during the Marcos regime, and initially focused on agriculture. But very quickly, a request was submitted by Antonio Carpio, a man who would help level the playing field in telecommunications, with then-president Fidel V. Ramos, or FVR. Antonio was born on October 26, 1949, in Davao City. He was smart, but more importantly, hardworking. And he graduated as a valedictorian in his university in law. Over time, he made a name for himself as a successful practitioner, which caught the attention of President FVR, who needed help in dismantling these monopolies legally. At this time, PLDT had controlled 92% of all telephone lines nationwide and had survived the previous president Aquino's efforts. They sought to achieve the same defiance against FVR's administration. Back at the president's office, Antonio made his case to FVR's team. "I recommend an executive order to be mandated by the president." Antonio was addressing one of FVR's aides.
"An executive order? Tell me more."
"I think we should force PLDT to open their telecommunications lines to any entrants who wish to enter. We can work out the fee structure later. But the point is, no one can afford to compete against PLDT unless they can use their lines. This way, we can begin opening up the economy."
FVR's aide was feeling cautious. This was no simple request. An executive order, in effect, is to force PLDT as if by law, and the Cojuangco family had supported FVR to presidency. From his eyes, Antonio could tell that FVR's aide was considering the repercussions.
"Look, I'm aware that Cojuangco's family had helped our president. I'm just recommending what I think is right for the economy." "Yes, we get it. It's after all what President FVR had called you in for."
"Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll figure it out. I agree that the economy comes first."
That day, Antonio would leave the office uncertain if the executive order, which he felt was necessary, would be approved. Then his phone rang.
"Is this Antonio?"
"Yes."
"Antonio Carpio?"
"Yes, it's Antonio Carpio speaking."
"The same Antonio Carpio who wants to bring down PLDT? I recommend you stop, or things won't look so good from here on out."
It was unclear how, but PLDT came to hear of Antonio's proposal, and the PR team of PLDT got straight to work defaming him. It was believed he spent each day after with anxiety until he received another call, this time by the president himself to his office. Without much pleasantries, he told Antonio directly,
"Where is the executive order you prepared? I'll sign it now."
Observing PLDT's aggressive retaliation had only reaffirmed the administration that years of governmental support had made the company become monopolistic thugs. The executive order became necessary, and quickly, competition came flowing in. New companies such as Smart, Sun Cellular, Biontel, Islacom, Extelcom, and of course, Globe Telecom had rushed in to compete. But solving access to landlines is one thing. Competing against PLDT was another. Unless a powerful organization could back one of these companies. Throughout PLDT's ascension, Globe Telecom had remained relatively obscure. Established on December 8, 1928, by an American company, Globe had focused on global and domestic messaging rather than long-distance phone calls. In 1965, right around the start of Ferdinand Marcos's term, Globe had merged with two other radio companies and continued to expand towards international communications. It would spend the rest of martial law in the shadows before 1974, when the Ayala Corporation came into the picture. The Ayala family is a Spanish dynastic rule that traces back to the mid-1930s. Through business smarts, intelligent inheritance structures, and political savvy, they had survived for over 100 years. Today, the legacy is run by Jaime Augusto Zobel de Ayala II, chairman of the Ayala Corporation, and eighth richest family in the Philippines behind Jollibee. It seems strange for the Ayala Corporation to look at Globe Telecom, because the industry would soon become monopolized by PLDT, aided by the administration. But Jaime I had a secret. He wasn't sure if he supported Marcos nearly as much as the Rolex 12. Instead, he helped out wherever he could, just enough to get his businesses out of trouble. On the side, he decided to invest into Globe and bide his time. It took a while, but by late 1985, he had noticed the groundswell against Ferdinand and decided that it was time to take a stand. Thankfully, his bet paid off, and Ayala's Globe were quickly given government approvals to compete against PLDT. In 1991, they further merged with another radio company. Then in 1993, they were allowed a partnership with Singtel, the Singapore National Telecommunications Company. These rapid mergers were enough to catch PLDT's attention, which was now significantly larger than before. Back at PLDT's offices, Manny Velez Pangilinan, or MVP, was ready to go to war. MVP was the head of Hong Kong's first Pacific company. In 1998, they had acquired a controlling stake of PLDT, then took over as CEO, pushing the Cojuangco family out. First Pacific Company was estimated to be three times larger than the Cojuangco family and was prepared to maintain their dominance in the market. In the following decade, PLDT and Globe would engage in a fierce head-to-head battle, leading to a transformative clash that would redefine connectivity in the Philippines and give rise to the nation's very first homegrown unicorn startup. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 1 of a 4-part series, An Astronomical Opponent. Next in Empires, we'll understand the rivalry within the telecom industry and meet the man credited for transforming Globe. Follow us so you won't miss out on episode 2 of our 4-part series, Finding Connection. Empires is a 1UP Media original, produced and edited by Guang Jin, audio experienced by Ethan Sam, and narrated by Louise Cruz. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.